Cyclone Nation. You are now tuned to the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast, presented by Mr. B Clothing. And now, here's your host, Chris Williams.
Everyone, welcome to a new installment of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast, brought to you by Mr. B Clothing, down at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. Mr. B, he's got a nice set of summer clothes, Brent Bloom, where you're getting married here. Yes. In a couple, and you got to have some like nice summer gear,
right?
For the the rehearsal dinner,
right?
You've got I don't know. You don't really have any showers or anything.
Thankfully,
that you have to
I'm
be
avoiding
to.
Avoiding those.
But you've got family obligations that you have to be to before the wedding. I would suggest you to head down to 86th Street.
Good idea. I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah.
Because the rehearsal dinner is kind of formal.
Yeah, no, yeah.
You
got to wear a tie.
Have to wear a tie, yeah.
Yeah. You have to wear a tie. And they've got. See, Timmy is always trying to sell the bright ones.
That'd be a good occasion for
it. The bright tie is what's
See, like a tan sport coat?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a good occasion for like a...
I got a tan sport coat.
Do you?
Yeah.
I need to add that. I don't have one. I need to add it to the collection.
I think so.
It's good for the summer.
Yeah. No, I would agree. Huh. I would agree. Big thanks to Mr. B Clothing for making this podcast possible. We did not podcast last week. My apologies. Had some stuff outside of work that I was pretty occupied with for a good majority of the week, and we just couldn't ever get around to getting a time together. So we potentially might have two podcasts this week, depending on Adam Gray's schedule as our sales director. Hopefully he can't do a podcast because that means he's out making money. That's what I'm pumping for, Bloom. But nonetheless, that might happen later on this week. It might not. Today I want to start with basketball. We're going to get to some football recruiting, too, as it's been kind of a wild week, really, in Iowa State. Wild 2-3 weeks, I actually would say, with Iowa State football recruiting. Generally, Brent, you and I are not guys who in June are amped up about football recruiting. I think they're signing, or not signing, but gaining commitments from some intriguing prospects.
I would agree, and it seems earlier than usual.
Yeah. Well.
Am I getting older?
We'll just start with football recruiting.
Right.
How about that?
Let's get out of the way.
Yeah. So, like, when we grew up and when we were in college, Iowa State really wouldn't start gaining commitments until the season started. But the longer Rhodes is here, this is a staff that has, specifically last year, it started with Lazard. They got that early momentum.
That was December of the year before, yeah.
So then, like, they had a lot of guys committed before the season, where really before last year that hadn't consistently been the case. The McCarney years, I mean, it's October, November, December before they really start picking up steam. But it is different now. What they do, the trend that I'm seeing is they sign, but they gain commitments from a lot of developmental guys early, and then they'll leave 5 to 10 spots and just try and hit home runs for the rest of the way. And I think it's important to remember that this class is going to be smaller than most. So the amount of, I think 15 scholarships potentially tops. They've got 7 commitments right now, so they may be halfway done.
Does the camp have anything to do with it?
Yeah, camp does.
Half of these kids seems like they went to the football camp.
Well, a lot of these kids that I'm noticing,
like the quarterback did.
The quarterback gets one offer, bam. He got offered on Friday night. He committed to Iowa State Friday night. And you're seeing a lot of these guys, and again, that's where I come back. They're clearly developmental guys. These are not, a lot of these guys are not highly touted guys. And yeah, the camp has something to do with it. The guys who are more highly recruited are not just going to commit because they went to camp, but you know, a guy like the quarterback, Dominic DeLira, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, out of Austin, Texas. Noteworthy, the same high school that Todd Reesing went to. Boy, that's a storybook coincidence right there.
Similar size kids.
Yeah,
I think Dominic's a little bit bigger.
I talked to him today. and this is Monday evening when we're recording this podcast. I found it to be really interesting, some of the things that he told me. I know a lot of other media outlets there have talked to the young man and written stories. I'm trying to take a different look at all of this, and he was telling me, and again, I'll write about it later in the week, but how Tommy Mangino went out of his recruiting territory to recruit this kid. Tommy just fell in love with him, according to what mm-hmm. Dominique told me, which I find interesting to pull the trigger on a quarterback with no offers,
right?
Like that, to go all in, to use the program's term, and offer a kid who does not have an offer is intriguing to me. I don't know if it's good or it's bad. I guess we'll find out. But they don't recruit many quarterbacks. Usually they zero in on one guy if he takes somebody else, and they zero in on another. It's what happened last year with Darius Lee Campbell, and that's what they did this year with Delirio.
Well, Lake Travis is a monster high school. Yeah. It's just massive. So for him to be the quarterback there, I think the offers would have come in time from at least the North Rices Texas. And the Houstons and the North Texases of the world. But Iowa State, what they have to do, they have to hop on those kids early and get them to pull the trigger. And it looks like it worked with this guy.
Well, and that is the trend. Seth Nernes, he intrigues me, Bloom, because I talk about it a lot. I'm from Southwest Iowa.
He's Murray.
Murray High.
Mustang.
Yep. The old KMA days, me and Bloom are down there in Shenandoah.
They're good people in Murray. Yeah. One of my favorite places.
It's always a nice place to go and call an eight-man game.
And I've actually done some officiating in Murray.
Have you?
And fine people. Always give you a free popcorn for officiating.
Nice. Yeah. That's the best part.
They treat you well down in Murray.
That's the best part of the small towns. Like if you're broadcasting or, in your case, if you're officiating. Like we would always go to like Stanton. That's where my wife's from. So I had a little bit of an in there, but they would always bring us like a steak burger or something if you're doing a football game. Sydney, Iowa would always bring you some really good Bedford.
Bedford was the best.
Bedford, yeah, they bring you pies.
They brought, at one time, it was my first week on the job, I was calling a volleyball match. Okay, real high quality stuff, let me tell you.
Volleyball is the funnest sport to call play-by-play.
And they have a scoreboard that said, "Welcome Brent Bloom" on the scoreboard. Yeah. As if you're a celebrity.
Well, back then you are.
And the town cafe brings up to the broadcast area, which is in the bleachers, two pies and a bucket of fried chicken.
You got fried chicken.
I got
too?
Fried chicken as a welcoming gift from the fine folks in Bedford.
Funny. My broadcast career also began in Bedford. I was doing a Bedford Clarinda Academy football game, and the local like kindergarten created welcome to Bedford signs for me and Dean Atkins, my broadcast partner at the time.
It's a different world in Southwest Iowa.
Correct. So
in a good and bad way.
I love it. So when Seth Nernes committed to Iowa State, I immediately got pumped because I'm like, I love the eight-man guys.
Eight-man.
And he's in Monday Musings, I don't know if you read it today, but I kind of compared eight-man football to the Capital City League in the sense that you really don't know mm-hmm. how this is going to transition, because and I talked to Seth about that. That story will be posted on Tuesday morning at CycloneFanatic.com. But like, sure, the kid is athletic. His measurables are great. But the game is so different. Just if he went from Murray to, let's do another Southwest, like Harlan, the perennial power in 3A.
Get a better idea.
If he went from Murray to Harlan, that would be a big jump.
Yep.
Going from Murray to Iowa State is a colossal jump. But he makes the point that, and this is true, and your background with the eight-man game, you will be able to confirm this too. When you play eight-man football, sometimes, and I don't know what the numbers are like at Murray nowadays, sometimes there's only 10 guys on your team.
Right.
You have to do everything. You got to line up out wide. You got to block. You got to kick return. You have to do everything. And that's what Seth Nernes is telling him. He's like, you know what? Like, I'm getting pigeoned as the eight-man guy, and that happens a lot. But he credits the eight-man game for turning him into the player that he is today.
And there have been a couple of guys to make the transition before, specifically with Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, not related to me, but Tyler, he says his name wrong, Tyler Blum,
mm-hmm.
from Walnut.
Walnut, yep.
Went to Iowa, got hurt, or else I think he would have been a pretty quality defensive lineman for them. And then the Fremont Mills kid.
Nate Meyer,
who's going to play a lot for Iowa.
I don't
he played
know,
last year.
No clue why Iowa State didn't offer that kid.
I don't either.
No sense to me.
I mean, he dominated that level. And I think Nernes, Murray's been really good the last couple of years, and I always wondered why. now it makes sense because this kid at that level just owns people.
Yeah. Well, and his stats really aren't. I think that he was used more in like a fullback type role
right.
last year, it looks like. He had 7 sacks.
Big kid, though, isn't he?
Big kid, 230, 6'4". He can run a 4.5 40. He told me, too, that Oklahoma and Louisville, they had not offered, but they invited him to camp as an outside linebacker. So I feel like if certain things happen with the defensive line in Iowa State, maybe that's potential. But,
big kid who can run.
Big kid who can run. If Bill Snyder offered him. That's my point with Nate Meyer, too, and I never understood that. And I'm clearly people biased towards the Southwest Iowa kids. I love the Southwest Iowa kids. But I'm like, if Nebraska and Iowa want a kid, how does Iowa State not offer? That doesn't make any sense to me for the life of me. You can't get too hung up on offers because Jake Knott didn't have any other offers. Clearly, they're – but my whole deal is, if Bill Snyder wants a guy, who is Iowa State to say we don't? If he's in your backyard.
Well, they're not a comparison in that Knott was a big guy who could run. It's football recruiting, you can really look at the measurables and analyze it, but you find a kid that's 6'3 or above, 215 pounds or above, and can run well,
mm-hmm.
you can usually find a spot for him in some capacity.
Kind of like a 7'1" basketball player who can shoot and run the floor.
Exactly.
Again, it's been an interesting with the quarterback commitment, Nernis. And then today, which is Monday, I realize a lot of you are listening on Tuesday or later, but Seneca Wallace is like second cousin. Jordan Wallace commits out of the blue, defensive back out of Denton, Texas. Another guy, no offers. So this is we've documented Iowa State's going to have a small recruiting class in 2015. They must really like these guys because I knew going into this whole thing, right now on our scholarship chart, and this is going to change. This is not locked down. The scholarship chart always changes between spring football and August. But there's only 12 seniors on there. Hmm. So technically going by that, there's only 12 spots. Now there's going to be attrition. So I'm anywhere really from, I would say, 12 to 17 spots is all you're going to have this year. And usually you're getting about 25. So you'd think that they... They're really honing in on these guys this year. At least the Wallace kid, though. He's 6'1". He's a body type recruit who they probably feel like they can build into something.
Was he the 10th, though? 10th?
Commitment?
Yeah.
7th commitment.
Oh, 7th.
Yeah. 6th or 7th commitment.
Okay. So they've got some room for those guys, but just he has to wear number 15, right?
Yeah.
It's almost a requirement.
No, he has to. Is there a 15 on Iowa State's
roster? Who's number 15 right now?
Hold on.
Let me think.
Pull up the roster here.
Because Wallace's jersey is not retired, or his number is not retired.
Well, we've got a Wallace on the Iowa State roster, but he's on the offensive side of the ball. So, in theory, Brandon Harris is that guy.
Brandon Harris is number 15.
Yeah, the wideout. And then the other 15, there's two 15s, but that is a walk-on quarterback.
Who? What's his name? We'll give him a shout-out.
Brandon Horbach.
Okay, Brandon.
Brandon gets 15 as a quarterback at Iowa State. Pretty prestigious
pretty cool.
there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, for a walk. But I think that 15's wide open on the defensive side of the ball.
Is there anybody on defense right now?
Nobody 15? On defense, 15.
Okay. So that he's got to take the number.
Yeah, no.
It'd be a shame
they better
if
just
wasn't.
Chalk that up right now.
Just reserve it now.
Chalk that up right now. 6'1", 170. That's got safety written all over it. Is for Jordan Wallace. But again, man, the football recruiting really picking up. And It usually, even to guys like us who are so close to everything, we're not, let's evaluate these guys' game film break. We're not X's and O's type measurables. We don't do that. But this round of recruiting, the kid from Waukee, the defensive end.
Yeah.
I think Bryce Meeker, who Rivals has as the top-ranked kid in Iowa. Intriguing guys that they're gaining commitments from.
And another offer to a Waukee kid.
Yeah, the I saw Trey Scott reported that. What's that kid's name?
Michael Jacobson.
Could there be two Waukee Warriors in one class?
Jacobson's a basketball player, though. 6'8", big kid, good size. He's got to decide.
Nelson's a basketball player, too, right?
Yep. So what would you do if given this situation? You're a guy like Jacobson. You're a D1 football player at the Big Five levels. We're going to start calling it because it's what it is.
Yep.
You play football at the Big Five level, or do you play basketball at what would be a Missouri Valley level, because he's not a Big Five basketball player quality talent.
I would go play football at the Big Five level any day.
But you throw in the injury concerns and all that jazz.
But think of the pension you can get to be on a practice squad for 3 years in the NFL.
Yeah, but
think about how many more football positions there are at a professional level than basketball. Unless you want to go overseas.
Sure.
Unless you're a guy who's like, Europe is where I want to be. Chances are that kid's not going to the NBA. Chances are, well, not chances are, but there is a chance that that kid could stick on a practice squad for 3 years in the NFL, and then you have a lifetime pension. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, but Jacobson, really, I mean, 6'8", impressive size, and I think he's got really good hands. I saw him a couple times last year. It's an interesting offer. His dad is Dr. Bill Jacobson, who's one of the orthopedic surgeons in town. He's well-known. I think he was a Barnstormers team doctor. So
interesting.
It's a guy who's been around athletics for his entire life, and he's a really good dual sport athlete.
Tight end, right?
Tight end.
Yep.
6'8". I don't think they can fill him out into be a lineman. I mean, I guess you can do that to anybody. I mean, he's 220 pounds right now, but he doesn't seem to have the body type where you can put 80 pounds on him. I don't know. Would be interesting if they would look at him at a tackle spot. I don't see it though from him.
Okay. That's good, Walkie Warrior.
Well, we got all sorts of Warriors.
Walkie Warrior analysis right there. We're just missing a good Clarinda Cardinal. And
you're not producing any I don't Big Five talent.
I don't see any Clarinda Cardinals heading to the Big 12 anytime soon. We got to get my dad on for
the analysis
of Western Iowa football recruiting. Dad, you know, he drives a bus for Clarinda, team bus. So he drives around and he sees all these teams. But nonetheless.
Has your dad been on the podcast?
No, he'd be a great guy to get on the podcast.
It'd be fantastic.
Yeah, because he is like, my dad's
hilarious.
People
would love him.
He's all in on the Cardinal and Gold, man. He'll call into the radio show every once in a while. And Dad, I feel, God love him. He called in and was praising Chris Klonakis before the season last year. He told me it was like a couple months ago. He's like, man, he goes, I'm never calling into your show again. That was the worst call in history. Because he's been reading all this stuff on the boards.
Everyone's pumped up with Klonakis.
Yeah, well. Other than his players.
Except for the line
who
itself.
Who broke down throughout the season because they were just gassed, but nonetheless.
It didn't work out well.
No. Tom Farniok's tweets said all you need to know about that. All right. I think that covers football recruiting. We got a lot going on here on the Mr. B podcast today. Bloom, Jameel McKay had 32 rebounds in a game in the Cap City League on Friday night. So, all I did was tweet the box score that he had 31 and 32, and I said, no, that's not a typo. Hashtag Cyclones. And immediately, Hawk trolls jump on me like
piranhas?
Flies on some old dog poop, man. I mean, they're on a hot summer's day. These Hawk trolls are just infuriated that I would even dare post
a stat.
That statistic. Yeah. From the YMCA Capital City League. One guy calls me an effing clown. I mean, the Hawk trolls are out in full force.
They're frightened.
Well, I don't know if they're frightened. So I get to thinking over the weekend. So, of course, a lot of Iowa State fans, they go too far with how excited they are about this 32-rebound performance.
Yes.
And the Hawk trolls are the total opposite, where they're just, it's a pickup. Well, it's not a pickup game. First of all, it's not. They're actual officials there.
They're officials.
They're going up against other Division I players. Not all Division I players. Good players.
I believe McKay was playing against a Dozy, right?
Yeah, I will look that box score up right now just for the sake of accuracy.
He's not rebounding against a 6'4 guy from Marshalltown Community College here. I mean, a Dozy's a big body. So there's that.
Yeah.
To throw in.
Yeah, he did. It was against the Naslong Daniel Dozy team.
Okay.
Is who he grabbed the 32 rebounds against. So I thought maybe this would be an appropriate time for a little clarification on how seriously fans should take these games. We've talked about this before, I believe, on the podcast, but I think a refresher course would be. And my point is, and I want to get your take on it. KJ Bluford didn't look very good in the Cap City League last year.
He had his moments, but by and large,
because he was chucking like 100 shots.
He appeared to be a one-dimensional basketball player.
Correct. Eric McKnight barely saw the floor when he played in the Capital City League.
It was not good.
Jordan Raley was never that good.
Nope.
Royce White was really good. Mm-hmm. Chris Allen was unbelievable. So my point is,
even if you go way back, Mike Taylor and Wes Johnson dominated that league when they
really
first
did.
Got here.
Craig Brackens was great.
And Corey McIntosh did not.
Correct. Dodie Dunson was Dodie Dunson.
Yeah, he didn't really do much either.
So what? How much stock do you take in this? Well, duh. He's not going to have 32 rebounds in a game, clearly. But I don't think you can completely throw out what happens in the Capital City League either.
Well, if you do the math, and I don't know if you have the complete shot attempts in that game.
Yeah, I do right here.
Was there a
you
how many? Him? Yeah, how many attempts did the other team have?
Did the other team have the other team, which actually wasn't bad? Richard Carter played for them. Richard Carter, Naz Long, and Daniel Dozy's not a bad.
No, it's a pretty good guard court.
3-man team. So there were field goal attempts 54 plus 39. That would be. I'm not good.
100.
At math
that's
off the
that's
top 93
head. Field goals.
93
attempts.
Shots
in the game.
Yeah.
So he got over a third of every rebound, which
well,
I don't care
that's
what.
From that team.
Oh, they had 93 attempts as a team?
Yeah.
What, oh, okay.
Phoenix Renewable Resources did.
Jeez.
So let's do.
That is a lot. A lot of shot attempts.
Oh, wait. Plus 106.
Okay,
Walnut
so we
Creek,
got.
Iowa YMCA jacked 106.
This is disproving my point right before my eyes. So we had about 200 shots.
199 shots.
Yeah, we got 200 shots, and he got 32 rebounds.
He got over a fourth of them.
That's 16%.
Yeah, he got an
16% of the rebounds. So we got one in every six rebounds, which is pretty good, or one every six and a half. That's, again, you can't take a lot from it.
Six shots.
But if you're getting that many rebounds, you're at least showing an effort. Which
yeah, like
I think
Dennis
you
Robin
could,
always said, anybody can rebound.
Yeah, and at least he's not just out there lollygagging. We've seen a lot of big men at that thing do that.
We've seen a lot of big men lollygag.
Just stand around the perimeter and chuck up threes. He's not doing that.
Nick
he's,
Royce.
He's trying to get rebounds, which I appreciate. Now, he is what he is. He's not going to be a, you know, he could average 8 to 10 rebounds. I don't think that's out of line.
Here's the issue with that. Is
he's got other people rebounding.
No, not even
as
that.
Well.
I don't think he's going to play the first half of the year.
Sure.
So just, to me, throwing him into the Big 12.
Yeah, you're not going to
he's
clean
got three
up.
Games before, unofficially. He's going to get Mississippi Valley State at home, Drake, neutral floor, and South Carolina, neutral floor. So then you're just going to just throw him to the Big 12. To me, averaging 8 to 10 rebounds is tough because when Dustin Hogue does that,
right.
He's feeding off of UMKC at home where he can get 18 rebounds in a game.
That's true. That's a very good point. But you've been at a couple Cap City League games now. At the very least, Jameel McKay is a legitimate 6'9".
Yes.
With long arms and good jumping ability.
He is better than I thought he would be.
So you can...
Even in the Cap City League.
You can stumble your way into 6 or 7 rebounds
every
game.
He will average at least 6. Yeah. Probably 7.
And he doesn't have
maybe
to...
Maybe 8 or 9.
He doesn't...
Probably not 9.
Like Edgem last year, he doesn't have to score for Iowa State to win. They're going to have other scores, plenty of other scores. So if he can get a bunch of offensive rebounds and put back dunks and lob dunks, he's going to help.
I think he'll be a lot like Melvin was in the sense that I don't see Fred drawing a ton of plays for this guy.
That's exactly where I was going.
Yeah.
He's just going to live on the glass.
Yeah. He's a little bit of, when I watch him, I don't know why, he reminds me a little bit of Jackson Vroman.
Yeah. Good, very good comparison.
Tip back dunks Jackson Vroman had.
Well, and Vroman had no low post game.
No.
Really. He would mean back down a little bit, but he wasn't.
And Jameel doesn't have much of one.
He can step out. McKay can step out and knock down a 15 footer, but he doesn't.
So can Vroman.
He doesn't need to. And I think that's why this Iowa State team is going to be really good. When you have the Niang, who is everything's going to go through again.
Yeah.
And then you have DeJon Jones, who can fill it up with anybody. And of course, you've got Monte and Naz and Nader, and all those guys can complement.
I am
plus Custer and Thomas.
I am concerned about somebody getting left out.
Yeah, well, it's almost inevitable.
Yeah, no, and I'm not concerned that somebody's going to get left out. My concern is how does that guy respond? Because you've got a lot of guys here who would play pretty much anywhere within reason. Somebody I feel is not going to get the minutes that they feel they deserve.
I forgot to mention Hogue's in that mix too.
Hogue always gets forgotten
about. Yeah, he did. And what did he score, like 50 the other night, which was interesting.
Hogue's games, he looks like a different player this summer compared to last. He had 42 on Friday night.
And we don't, we will not know who gets left out.
No, we have no clue.
I bet the coaching staff doesn't know either.
I mean, you look at all those guys, and they all bring something unique to the table. The guy who is Nader is, I don't know what you do with him. I like what I see from him, but I don't know especially how you, because like all these guys have really specific skills that they're really good at. DeJon Jones is a great scorer. Monte Morris is a great distributor. Matt Thomas can be a really good three-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
McKay, we've already outlined what he does. We know about Niang. Nas Long can hit the three. I don't know what Nader does really well. Yeah,
we don't know that yet.
I think he's really good at a lot of areas, but I don't know if he's great at any. Other than the fact that he's shown range with his jump shot that I think we were questioning. Again, this is Cap City League. We get it. But nonetheless, he's still hitting like 6 out of 10 threes. That,
yep,
to me, is interesting because I didn't know he could do that even in a pickup game. And he's huge.
Very explosive, and he's big.
He is. Have you seen him yet
in
person?
Yeah.
He's huge.
He's a big dude.
I feel like, you know what I hope his role is? I hope he's like the regulator out there, man. Because I think he has a nasty side to him, and I think he can really bring that to this team.
They're going to have fouls to give.
Yeah.
Unlike last year, where when you got Niang and Edgem in foul trouble, it was going to hold on for dear life and hope you can hang on. Maybe Fred plays unlike he has. Maybe he goes 9 and 10, guys. You could.
I can't see him.
I don't either.
Kansas is at Hilton Coliseum going 10 deep.
I just don't know who gets left off. Because you have to play McKay because of his length. Okay, McKay's not going to be the guy who's left off.
Neither will DeJon Jones.
And DeJon Jones will be in there. Niang's obviously playing his 30-plus minutes. So Hogue's got to play. Nader's got to. But it's those two guys play
Nader,
virtually
Thomas,
the same spot.
Long. Those are the guys, really. Nader, Thomas, Long
can all play that two spot.
Yeah.
I don't know how you divvy that up.
Custer's your backup point guard.
Custer's going to play because he's the backup point guard.
He'll be the backup point guard over Nas.
And then we haven't even mentioned Sherron Dorsey Walker, and I feel bad for Sherron. But he's fourth in that guard mix.
Absolutely,
he is. Two-guard spot.
Absolutely, he is.
And he can't play the point.
No.
If he wants to guard a little better, and I liked your article with him, because he realizes that.
Yeah, he knows that's the only way he's
He's only going to play if he can guard.
And
it's a good problem to have, but somebody's going to be unhappy.
Dorsey Walker, really, realistically, like we can talk about his rebounding, we can talk about his body, we can talk about whatever you want. If he'd go out there in the non-con and shoot like 60-70% from three and just go nuts, he'd earn some minutes. Because, you know, but he made like three threes last year. He had opportunities and he didn't do anything.
We haven't even mentioned the Greek yet, who I don't know where they're going to find minutes for him. I know everyone's saying, well, he's good enough to play 10 minutes. Where? Where is he going to play?
They would be very much beneficial to redshirt him, but I don't see that kid coming from Greece to redshirt him.
We can have the same conversation every week from now until the season, and we really realistically will not know until that first game how this is going to shake out.
Isn't this exciting, though?
It is. It's good. But you can't, for us to say this is who's going to sit now is stupid because we don't know.
My opinions
really
have already changed just by watching. I mean, McKay, listen, I don't think Jameel McKay will ever. I think a lot of people have this thing built up in their minds where it's like Royce White type superstardom. He's not that type of guy, but he's way better than I thought he was going to be. And
he has to play. He's not, again, with his length and his shot blocking ability, he gives obviously a dimension that nobody else has on that team. So he's going to play 20 plus minutes a game.
We throw him on last year's team, Brent.
I know. Oh.
Woo. Yeah.
People
so,
are going to like, you're going to like Jameel McKay. He's fun.
He's a fun guy. He approaches the game very lightly. You know what I mean? It's not, there's not a ton of intensity out there. It's not like, I'm not trying to say that he's slack. He has fun. You can tell he's enjoying the game of basketball.
They just really haven't had a player like him. Vroman's a good comparison. But Vroman didn't really block shots. He did a little bit.
And neither did Edgem.
Edgem, they haven't had a shot blocker.
Cato?
Cato, really?
Yeah.
That's probably about it.
Have you seen Clayton
Holman
Custer?
Blocked some shots, but Holman was there forever.
What do you think about Clayton Custer?
Exactly what I thought. He's better than I thought scoring wise, but you can't leave him off the floor. He's so smart, and he's going to find his spots. He's got a little Monte in him, but I think he's a better scorer than Monte was at this point last year.
Poor man's Kirk Heinrich. Is that too far? That's what I wrote today. Poor man's. Kirk Heinrich is one of the greatest players to ever come out of the state.
Heinrich is more of a... Heinrich was 6'3". Okay, Custer's only 6 foot.
But same skills.
Yeah, if you want the NBA comparison...
Yeah, give me the NBA comparison. Let's hear it.
Well...
He looks like Kirk Heinrich, too.
He does. He looks like him.
Yeah.
But if you want to go straight comparison...
Let's hear it.
He's an extremely, extremely, extremely poor man's Chris Paul. It's that type of game. The screen and roll stuff, the floaters, the drives,
and
that type of thing.
You want to add more there? Gee,
well, he's,
Chris,
well, but he's not. People are going to be on the board, like Bloom just said, Custer's Chris Paul. No, he's not. But
yeah, that's when Hawk Troll, who tunes into our podcast because he's obsessed with Iowa State.
As a short guy myself, when you're his size playing in the Big 12, you have to create angles and floaters and that type of stuff, which... When you're 6'3", you can get away with just overpowering some people.
Yeah.
But Custer's going to have to live off those artistic moves in the lane if he wants to finish at the rim. And he can finish at the rim. He scored 40 points. You're doing something right. And his long-range ability will surprise some people. He can really shoot it. He's going to play.
He's going to play. He's the backup point guard.
He'll play. Him and Monte can play together, too, depending on the guards opposite them.
It is going to be a... fun team to watch. Okay, Mr. B Clothing Podcast, we got about 15 minutes to go. I want to talk a little NBA draft with Bloom. Bloom, now you're going to release your mock draft later on in the week, right?
Right, as if we don't have enough of those
around.
No,
but you're going to put a cool Big 12 Iowa State Bloom spin.
Yeah, we'll have fun with it.
People who don't care about the NBA draft will read it because you wrote it.
Well, you've got your experts out there. I'm obviously not an expert. I pretend I am sometimes, but... It's my favorite event of the year.
As Ken Miller would put it, you've had your cup of coffee in the NBA.
It was very, very small cup, but a cup indeed.
With some sugar and some cream.
You did your.
I remember the one time you did the sideline reporting for the Magic, and I tuned in, and you did a hell of a job.
I mean, that means I've been in the locker room
with
guys like Dwight and Mikal Piatris.
Stan Van Gundy?
Who's back in the league?
Yeah, so if you went to Stan Van Gundy press conference, would he know your name? Would he go, hey, what's up, Bloom? How you doing, dude?
He would not.
Been reading your work. It's Cyclone Fanatic.
He would not do that. He might recognize my face because Stan and I could look each other in the eye. He's a short dude.
Is he?
Yeah. He's like 5'6".
Yeah.
So we always got along. He would absolutely destroy you if you asked a bad question.
Really?
And so you had to care.
Those are the worst.
So I was around him every day. So, I mean, you do get to know him. And at one point, it made my year. He goes, I just want to say something. You haven't asked me a dumb question all year, and I appreciate
it. Nice. That's awesome.
Like, at that point, I was like, all right, I can retire now.
Because that's where I was going to go. Did Stan Van Gundy ever light you up?
He never did. I asked him one time a dumb, kind of a quasi-dumb question. He kind of set me straight about bench scoring. And it was kind of the whole deal of, well, if the goal is to score points, I don't care where it comes from. They were having problems scoring off their bench, and so he's like, I don't care how we score points; they just have to be enough to win. But he's now the coach and GM of the Pistons.
Yep,
and he's one of the brightest basketball guys around. So I think he will help them immensely. And we'll see what they do on Thursday, among other teams.
Tony La Russa swore at me once.
You're probably not the first.
Oh,
or the
he
last.
Was mean. Oh, I did. I asked him.
He's a surly man.
I was down there at KMA. They sent me to the spring training, and I asked La Russa it was like my first day down there, so he had no clue who I was. And, of course, you know, I'm like 22.
Right.
KMA, Shenandoah, Iowa. That's what I said.
Yeah.
And I asked him some question about his struggling bullpen, and he goes, who the hell are you? And I was...
Welcome to the bigs.
Yeah. It's funny because covering the Royals is like covering Iowa State. They're great.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
just love
the best
coverage.
People. They're so nice. And then I don't really know what covering Iowa's like. I've never covered Iowa, but I feel like covering the Cardinals would be like covering the Hawks, just based off of what our friends in the media have told me.
It's just a little more about them than the media.
Well, not even that. It's just more like...
controlled?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. But nonetheless, okay, so we're going to talk NBA draft now. I read on Sporting News that DeAndre Kane's going to be a first-round pick.
That's a
stretch. What would be your analysis of that?
That's the only place I've seen him even near the first round.
I don't even see him in the second round of
most places. He's not in the second round. But again, like anything, all it takes is one team to really like you to grab him. But I don't see it happening. And it's not what's hurting DeAndre. The first thing everyone's going to say, he's 25 years old.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is older than James Harden. If you can
That's
compare
perspective
them.
Right there.
And he's the same age as Russell Westbrook. And how long has that guy been in the league? But it's not only his age. It's even though he shot the ball better this year, the NBA three-pointer, if you're ever at Wells Fargo Arena, go stand behind the three-point line for an NBA game. It is so much different than the college three. And so in order to shoot all the way back there, a point guard has to shoot it above 30%, and I just don't know if DeAndre can. And so it's the shooting and the age, and has he hit a ceiling from his shooting consistency? And I think both those things will hold him back. He could be a backup point guard, but you can find those guys throughout the D-League and everywhere else. And it's same with Edgem. It's what's going to prevent Edgem probably from being drafted as well, if you would ask me right now, is Melvin's a 6'5.5 combo forward, and those guys, at least measurement-wise, are all over. You can find guys like that. Now, you can't find the intangibles of a Melvin Edgem, but in the draft, you're looking for those guys with the measurements, and both those guys don't really have it.
Okay, so let me pose this question to you. Is Marcus Smart that much better than DeAndre Kane?
No, but he's 6 years younger.
Okay, no, and that's fine. I'm not saying that DeAndre Kane should be a lottery pick. That's not where I'm going here.
And I would say Marcus Smart is a better pure physical specimen than Kane is.
Okay.
Athletically.
Okay, I'll agree with you there.
But statistically, Kane was better last
Correct.
Year.
Much
and
better.
And it's not fair.
And if you go like by all the analytics and point. Stuff like that, Kane was like maybe the best player in college basketball
a year
He
was.
Ago.
He was.
So.
But it's not about your college stats.
Let me make the point and then you tear it apart.
Okay.
Because you probably disagree with me. But my thing is, this is what I hate about the NBA draft. I'm like you, I love it, especially this year, being a Bulls fan. You got two Iowa State players involved. I'm intrigued by what's going to happen on Thursday night. But the whole second round, it's just all these guys you're drafting off of potential, you're shipping them off to Europe, you're doing what the Heat did with Justin Hamilton. It's all potential, potential, potential. At what point does a team like, the Heat, for instance, say, this Kane guy could help us win next. He could help us win right now, as opposed to drafting, Joe Schmo from Serbia,
right?
Who we have no clue if he can ever play in the league. We're not even going to see him for 4 years. You know what I mean? That's what annoys me as a fan about the NBA. Because when I watch the NFL draft, damn it, I know that fourth round pick is going to play for the Minnesota Vikings next year.
Right, just because of numbers-wise, they
correct.
Have to.
I feel like DeAndre, because of his age, DeAndre more so than Melvin, I feel like could actually help a team win next year. Now, why am I wrong there?
You're not, but you've got to keep a couple things in mind. One, only about half the teams in the NBA want to win next year. That's it's stupid about the NBA, but it is what it is, because only a handful of teams can win the title.
Yep.
So they're used for a 25-year-old backup guard to make their team better. Some of them don't want to be better next year.
So what about like...
So there's that. Okay.
Sorry.
But then also, you're looking in the second round is such a crapshoot because it's not a guaranteed contract.
Nope.
And you can have 15 guys on your roster. Only 12 can be active. And so if you're trying to fill out your roster, in the last 4 years, there have been 120 players drafted in the second round. 15% of those guys are in a rotation right now in the NBA. That's it. 85% are out of the league or inactive. So just go, the numbers just aren't on second rounder side because they're not seen as important pieces of the puzzle. If you're a first rounder, you're guaranteed a spot. They will find a spot for you to use you. But if you're a second rounder, you're expendable, and you're just, unless you blow them away in the preseason, you're just a guy. And that's why they stash those guys away, because maybe that person will turn into something later down the road where you know you're getting from DeAndre Kane and he can help you. But does he help you as the 12th guy on a bench? And for a team like Miami, maybe.
That is my lone point, though.
They are the lone wolf among the rest of them. So you're looking at maybe a Miami could help. Maybe an Oklahoma City
is the team I was thinking of.
An L.A. Clippers, they could help them. But those are three of the 30. So what do you do with the rest of them? And that's kind of what the debate is.
Yeah. No, I completely understand. I get
it's silly.
But you did play into my point, though. My point was one of these upper-tier teams. To me, it makes a lot of sense.
It does. And that's why at that Miami's
6'5" or six, whatever he is, point guard.
But Miami's going to take a guard probably with they're going to get the 26th pick. But now you're a GM for the Miami Heat.
Yep.
You've got DeAndre Kane on the board there. You've got Shabazz Napier on the board there. Who do you take?
Shabazz Napier.
I mean and so now
well played.
It's just there's not enough spots there. Everyone says, well, DeAndre's an NBA player. I agree. I think he could fit in the NBA. But you have to find the right mix and the right spot, and it's tough.
There's a scenario I saw last Friday when I was putting together some mock drafts that I loved, and it made a lot of sense. Melvin Ejim to the Spurs. Would he fit in perfect with that franchise?
Yeah, I think he would. And that's what they've done, though. I mean, half of their team, they had one lottery pick on their entire team that won the championship. So Melvin's a dude who can get in there, work hard, get some rebounds. But again, he's a 6'6". Probably a power forward, and he's got a guard at that level too. He shoots it okay, but what position is he going to play, and how can he have a long sustained career? If you have that 55th spot pick, it's not a bad place to pick Ejim, but then you gotta beat old man vets to make the team, and so it's an uphill battle for those guys. But they're gonna battle. I don't know what you can do.
Last question I wanted to drill you about NBA draft-wise. I saw another scenario out there. Well, two scenarios that intrigued me. One of them had DeAndre Kane going to the Houston Rockets in the second round. After what happened with Royce White, any chance that could happen? Because that, to me, you know, here's another guy who was scot-free at Iowa State. And does the Royce White... And then there was a scenario where the 76ers were taking both Iowa State guys, where the 76ers, like assistant GM who drafted Royce White, went there. He traded for Royce.
Yeah.
So, I guess is there anything left over from Royce White's reputation? Does that affect Iowa State going forward?
Not at all. Royce is his own animal.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's apples and oranges. I know people. Well, Fred vouched for Roy, so it's going to hurt. Yeah,
that's the obvious question. That's why I'm asking you.
Nope. Their production speaks for themselves. Royce has nothing to do with those guys. If they don't get drafted,
well, it's not Ejim, but I think more so Kane.
No, I understand
because Kane had the
some
character
baggage,
issues.
But they're all separate, and they do their so much homework on all of them that it won't impact them at all. If they're not drafted, it's because they didn't have the measurements or the ability to make a team.
Okay,
but they'll both play in the summer league, by the way, even if they're not drafted.
Maybe we'll get one of them in the D League here.
It's possible, but if they don't want to play in the D League, they can both make $300,000 overseas. They're gonna make a nice living.
Yeah,
don't feel bad for them.
No, I don't. I just I'd like to.
I hope they get drafted.
That's why I'm so still dejected about the Royce White thing. Because I really, for the first time in my life, I actually considered buying the NBA package when Royce was a lottery pick.
And he's not done yet.
I hope not.
He's close. But he's only 22.
Who you going to get another shot? When does
it happen? Somebody will give him a summer camp.
Boy, I hope so.
Invite.
For his sake, I hope so. All right. I don't want to ruin too much of what's coming up in your mock draft later on this week. But Joel Embiid, Big 12 guy. He's creating a lot of buzz right now. Is he Greg Oden?
He's not Greg Oden. Because I think...
Is he Olajuwon?
Athletically, and you can't say he's Olajuwon either. The injury question marks are going to drop him out of the top three.
Top three? I wouldn't draft him top seven. No way.
See, and this is where the argument comes, and we'll all discuss in the mock draft, but you're the Orlando Magic, okay, at four.
Yeah.
You're going to be terrible next year. Doesn't matter who you pick at four. Okay, so at four, the consensus fourth pick now is either Embiid for the Magic, where they could roll the dice on him and have a potential. If Embiid could walk into the NBA healthy tomorrow. He's not healthy, okay, I realize this. But if he's healthy tomorrow, he walks in the NBA, he's a top 10 center in the game. At age 20, with the ability to become one of the best centers in the NBA.
With major injury pass but is a seven-footer.
I realize. And so the injuries are a red flag, but the potential is still crazy with him if he can just get his injury concerns out. Or if you're the Magic, you draft an 18-year-old point guard named Dante Exum who has played against Australian high school kids for the last 4 years.
I wouldn't
it's
take either one of them.
It's a different level of question mark. Now, Exum could be really good, but they already have Victor Oladipo at the point guard. They could use.
Why is Marcus Smart still available?
Marcus Smart's available. He can't shoot. So
I would take Marcus Smart or either one of those guys.
And
without question.
They might.
That's ridiculous. Why wouldn't you take Marcus Smart over the Exum?
Because he can't shoot.
I don't care. You just outline why I shouldn't take this Exum kid.
I'm
going to take the guy who
he's talented.
Yeah.
Exum's talented.
No, I want the guy who's proven again in the best league in college basketball.
And so therein lies the dilemma. Because the top three
I hate this potential talk. This is what drives me mad about the NBA draft. It is all about potential,
The college guys who...
I know.
It doesn't translate. Production in college doesn't translate one-to-one.
And that's what the NBA people say all the time, that their measurables and their scout is much more valuable than what you see in the NCAA tournament.
But I'll give you two guys who I think will translate. And if you can shoot the ball at an elite level, you'll be fine.
Stauskas?
Stauskas is a great pick. I love that guy.
Yep.
And then Mr. McDermott, I think, is an excellent pick.
Interesting.
Because his shooting ability is not just good, it's elite NBA. He can step in and play.
Can he defend?
He's not as bad of an athlete as people think. Yep. His vertical jump was the exact same as Melvin Edgem's.
Wow.
Both 35 inches.
I was thinking about this last night. I was listening to some national sports talk radio, and one of the analysts was talking about McDermott. He actually said McDermott's going to be like the bust of the draft. That was just this one guy's opinion. He was like a freaking editor for like Slam magazine, so I didn't put too much stock in it. But I got to thinking, I'm sitting here in Des Moines, Iowa, listening to national sports talk radio. They're talking about Doug McDermott. Boo Boo Paolo was a huge story a week ago. Harrison Barnes is Harrison Barnes. Now, I think we all thought those guys would have careers, you know, be pretty good when they were like juniors in high school. We knew Barnes would. But who would have thought they would be all such huge stories? Because McDermott goes on to be the best player in the game. Boo Boo, for reasons that nobody saw coming, has spent a ton of time on the front page.
Right.
It's just wild how that all played out.
Well, Barnes and McDermott will play together on the same high school team. They're both going to be top 10 picks in the NBA draft.
Yeah, Ames,
it's
Iowa.
Out of Ames, Iowa, which is just
neither
nuts.
One of them went to Iowa State.
And I think McDermott will go in the top 10.
I love Doug.
You know who
McDermott.
Might grab him?
Both.
Michael Jordan and the Charlotte Hornets. So
they got
the ninth pick.
Didn't they take Adam Morrison too?
They did, and so that would be the reason why they don't. But they need a shooter. But the Adam Morrison comparison makes me nervous. But Morrison was a weirdo.
What happened to him?
He tried to make a comeback last year and he got hurt.
He had a sweet stash.
He hurt his knee like his second year in the NBA and was just never quite the same.
Yeah.
But I think McDermott will be a very, very good NBA player.
Whoever Doug McDermott goes, it'll probably be my second favorite team, to be honest with you. I'll be cheering for him.
Yeah.
All right, Bloom. Thank you.
It'll be fun.
Appreciate
Thursday
it.
Night. Can't wait.
Looking forward to will you be tweeting?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
That's big.
It's a big day.
No, it is your. It's
well,
like a
it's
holiday
that,
for
but
you.
It's that. It's the World Cup.
Yep.
During
yep.
the day, and Tiger's back. Tiger's back on tour.
He is
on that Thursday.
He won't make the cut.
Probably not.
No.
I'd be surprised.
He won't make the cut. All right, he's Brent Bloom. I'm Chris Williams. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Again, we may or may not have another podcast this week to make up from last week, but we're going to do two one of these weeks to make it up for you, I promise. Thank you very much to Mr. B Clothing, 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. We will be back either later this week or next week. Thanks for listening.